The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Joining me now is literary superstar who has penned 20 books over 20 years. That's so impressive. Charmed nearly a million readers across Ireland and the UK and is ready to spill the secrets behind the pages. Author and writer Sinead Moriarty joins me on the back of her latest book, Good Sisters. Good morning, Sinead, and congratulations.
Well, that's an introduction and a half. Thank you.
Well, a million readers is, I mean, you can't argue with that. How does that make you feel?
I think that something about 20 books in 20 years is something about roundy numbers. I just thought, you know, I'm really enjoying this year. I think I'm kind of feeling like it's a real celebration of something. The imposter syndrome is definitely now long gone.
Let's talk about that for a second because, you know, how it's hard to imagine, you know, when you see, I was in Easton's the other day and I saw your book on the shelf, and it would be hard for anyone to imagine looking at on a shelf and seeing an author there, a book, and imagining that they may not have a huge amount of confidence considering what they've done. You know, how did that express itself in your early years of writing, and how many books of the 20 did it take before you got rid of it?
Well, I think you'll find this with most authors, actually. For me, it was my fourth book. I kind of went, okay, I can do this. And my greatest desire was, I mean, obviously you want success, you want readers, that's why you're writing. But my greatest desire when I started this was always longevity. I wanted to do this for a long time. So I kind of feel something about 20 years, I kind of went, okay, great, I've achieved that, and please God, it'll keep going. So it's just, I feel very kind of content in that I've achieved a lot of the things I wanted to achieve. Mm.
What would 20-something-year-old you think if you were able to go back and say, hey, good news, we write 20 books together?
I would have been absolutely over the moon.
Yeah. Why was longevity so important? Because a lot of people just think, I just want to write a book and see it on a shelf and boom, you know, box ticked.
Because for me, it's a compulsion. It's my happy place. It's where I go. It's kind of like my meditation, I guess, to be honest. I go and disappear into my novels, and my worries and anxieties go away. So I just love writing. It's the only thing I want to do. When I'm in my office writing, I'm so happy. So that's why I want longevity, because this is what I want to do. I want this to be my career.
Well, I think it is. It's fair to say. it doesn't need to start. You're very much in it. And it's going so well with a million readers, which is just an incredible achievement. I'd like to come back in a few moments to your system and how you work, because I'm writing a book myself at the moment. And that's an aspect. I haven't quite found my perfect system. So I'd be intrigued to find yours. But let's get into the book, because that's why you're here. Good Sisters, number 20. It starts at an interesting place, and it's, you know, where there's the death of the Devlin's family's mother, and they're dealing with the fallout from that. And it's very much engaged in that wonderfully complicated world of sibling relationships and family relationships. Why that space? Why, obviously, the Devlin's have featured before in your books, but why this topic?
Well, so I've written two books about the sisters before, and there's a 10-year gap then. And I just kind of went back to them. I kind of felt there was more to say, and I wanted to open the book with a funeral. I mean, my dad dropped dead, say, 9 years ago, and I needed space from that before I could write about grief. And so I just thought it'd be really interesting to open with the funeral of their mum. And also, Irish people are very good at grief, but we also handle it very differently. And I just thought it'd be really interesting, because the three sisters are very different. You know, one of them has a blended family, one is a single mum, and one has four crazy sons. But I just thought it'd be really interesting how they handle it, and how, you know, sometimes it brings you together, but sometimes it kind of pulls you apart a bit. And then obviously it all focuses on the dad to make sure he's okay. And, you know, a single man in a golf club is like the Hope Diamond. So he is being stalked by women with baked goods and casseroles, which the girls don't like either, because it's too much too soon. And I just thought it'd be really interesting to explore that. And then obviously they are all in that kind of sandwich generation where they all have kind of teenage or young teen kids. They're looking after their dad. They're working. It's just that whole kind of craziness that we all live in at the moment. And they have very real problems, teenage children problems, all the kind of things that people deal with every day. But I love the idea of family. I always write about families, and you know, when something, you kind of throw a bomb into the book, and what happens? What's the fallout? How does everyone handle it? And lots of different things happen in the book. You know, like Louise's daughter decides she wants to find out who her dad is. She had a one-night stand in Italy. They all have to go to Italy and try and find the dad. Loads of different things happen in the book. There's a good bit of crack as well.
It also deals with sibling archetypes. Mm. And, you know, I'm the youngest of six. Mm. So anyone with any siblings knows that when you reunite, particularly if there's an amplifier like a bereavement or something like that,
yeah,
everyone regresses to type. Everyone reverts to type. And it's something I find that when I'm with my own siblings, I really have to keep mindful of, keep a conscious awareness of how, okay, I'm about to walk in here. How do I want to behave? How do I want to show, you know, to see, for people to see me as, you know, and to really keep a handle on that. Autumn, those neural pathways kick in fast.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're having the same discussions. You're reacting the same way. You're deferring. You're letting people, as the youngest, you let other people make decisions for you. And it's something, you know, I think you did a great job in the book at bringing, though, teasing that out.
I think that's huge. And I'm fascinated by where you come in the family. I think it's really, it kind of defines who you are.
Where do you come in yours?
I'm the youngest.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the there's obviously, there's Louise and there's Julian and there's Sophie. And they are, you know, they are quite eldest, middle, youngest types. But I also, as you say, the minute you walk through the front door of your family home, you are the eldest, the middle, or the youngest. That's it. No matter what's happened in your life, that's who you are. That's your place. And I think it's kind of interesting because as I was talking to somebody, actually, they said when both of your parents died, then it changes. But like until that, you are eldest, middle, youngest. That's just the way it is.
And you know what? As the youngest, sometimes it's kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm down with being the youngest.
Because I am still spoiled rotten by my older siblings who take that control, you know, who take those the ownership of things that we would have been left out of, you know, and it's something I'm actually very conscious of. And I wonder, did you experience it as the youngest? If something happened like, you know, granny died or there was an important conversation about something adult that you were sort of hooshed to one side or you needn't mind about that now, you know, why don't you go out there? And actually, I try consciously to include, you know, particularly my youngest kids in difficult conversations. Not that you have to dwell on it, but they need to be there because I found in later life, I struggled with being able to know how to act around, say, death or money. Or, you know, I had to learn those skills kind of later in life because I had been shielded from so much. And I wonder, did you experience any of that?
I'd say it's more the case with six and three. With three, you're kind of, you're in it. But yeah, I know what you mean, though. I do know what you mean. Yes, you're late to the party. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Your
children's books, I'm fascinated by the gear change into that and if it's one you've really enjoyed. What are the differences in terms of writing, fiction? Because it still has to have an arc and characters
Absolutely.
And the same nuts and bolts and scaffolding. But how does it differ in other ways?
Well, I think sort of about 6 years ago, I'd written, I think, maybe 15 books at that time for adults and it was going really well. But I wanted to exercise a different muscle. I wanted to shake things up.
Yeah.
And at the time, the situation in Syria was really bad, the refugee crisis. And I just started to write a book about a little girl from Syria. I kind of woke up with this image in my mind of a girl in a hijab and a backpack going to school in Ireland. And that became The New Girl. And my fourth children's book, which is called Fixing Mum and Dad, it's about divorce, is coming out in September. And I've just loved writing for children. It's just actually a very joyful space. As you say, it's the same thing. The characters have to be engaging. You have to be a bit more careful with children. It's very important that the books end with hope, in my opinion. I'm writing for eight sort of 13-year-olds. So the books always end up with hope. But they have serious themes. I mean, I've written about homelessness and I've written about climate change and now it's about divorce. But I think children are well able for serious themes. I mean, they're being bombarded with all kinds of images and stories. So,
do you use real children for as research? I mean, do you actually do you get feedback from kids as the topics that they'd like to deal
yeah,
with?
Yeah. So, for the first couple of books, my own kids kind of read and gave me feedback, and then I started going around schools and libraries and talking to children, and I said, "Look, what's on your mind?" And climate change and divorce kept coming up. So I wrote Finding Hope about climate change, and then Fixing Mum and Dad is about divorce. And I want to write what kids want to read. So, you know, I will always ask them, what's on your mind? What do you think?
Because I like that. And maybe as a children's writer, you might feel pressure to, everyone has to have a magic sword and jump into a hole, into a magic land. And there has to be, you can't just write a book about a magical fantasy. You have to write 30 books about a magical. So it can be a series. And, you know, so I guess it's an environment maybe where perhaps you feel pressure to be pushed down a certain avenue.
I think the good thing is I started writing kind of a long time into my career for kids. So like, I'm not going to be a pigeonholed. I'm going to write what I feel passionately about. And I feel passionate about lots of subjects. And I think so do children. And if you write, you know, a story about a serious subject in a very engaging and sweet way and end with hope, like they love it. They absolutely lap it up.
Do you still get a buzz from going into a bookshop and seeing the book on the shelf?
I did actually on my way here. I just popped into Dubray, and yeah, it's amazing. It's such a beautiful feeling, and you feel so grateful to, you know, booksellers and readers, because, you know, you're only as good as your last book, and that keeps you very much on your toes. I mean, you are self-employed. You know, if I get sick, no one's going to pay me. But I think it's really important, and something that I'm very conscious of. Like I strive for each book to be better, and I think that's a really good way to work, because it kind of pushes you and it keeps momentum going.
How do you know if it's better?
I think it's like anything, you're crafting your skill. It's like it's like Adelecki, you know, she's probably going to win gold at the next Olympics because she's constantly crafting and building and learning. And I just think that all of those things are making you better.
Yeah, I definitely had to learn the etiquette with my first book, because I didn't know about how you deal with the bookshops and signings and things. So I rocked into a bookshop and I saw my book there and I was like, oh, yay, my book's here. And I said to the guy, hey, do you want me to, I wrote that. Do you want me to sign a few copies? And he's like, no.
And I went, burst your bubble.
It got so awkward. He's like, well, maybe I have a pen somewhere. I was like, it's okay.
So awkward.
I didn't realize that's something that your publisher organizes.
Yeah.
So it's not awkward.
Yeah.
But talk to us about your process, because I guess every writer is different. Some people have, you know, energetic mornings. Some people like to work late into the night when the kids are asleep. Maybe you chop and change. How do you work? In your garden. Is it a
no, it's like a tiny little glorified cupboard that is in the house. That's my office.
Okay.
But, I am very structured. I'm very disciplined. That's just my bag. That works for me. So I kind of, I've always worked sort of 9 to 3 school hours. And I very much plot and plan my books. Interesting though, with the kids' books, I don't. I just have an idea and I see what happens. So that's been really interesting. Maybe because they're shorter, they're less. I'm less worried about going down dead ends.
Yeah.
But
in terms of the plot and the characters, what are your touch points before you actually would sit down? Okay, I know exactly what
I'm
writing.
They're always issue driven, so it's always an idea.
So you'll pick a topic and then
it's a topic. Okay. Yeah, it's like whether it's euthanasia or infertility or grief or whatever it is, it's a topic. I start looking into it, researching it, and figuring out, is it meaty enough for like a really good book, a really good story? And then I start writing. That's for the adults. And then with the kids, again, it's climate change, it's homelessness, it's an idea. And then I start writing.
How do you handle distractions? They say it takes 23 minutes for you to get back into the zone if you're engaged in something like writing or painting or whatever it is, maybe just even focusing on a spreadsheet. You know, do you find it hard if you get derailed to get back into that flow state, as they call
it? No, I used to really worry about that. You know, like I'd look at my watch and it was pickup time from school and I'd be fuming because I'd be in a really good zone. But it's there. It comes back. I've learned that. There's no need to worry. It comes back. It's always going to come back. It's there. I try not to get too bogged down and, you know, stand up every hour, walk around. If it's flowing, it's flowing. I'm not moving.
Yeah.
And if it's not flowing, I just sit there and sweat it out, because otherwise it's never going to come.
Do you have any fears around writing?
No, I just love it. I suppose if the fear is that I won't be able to write, but no. I think the harder you work, the more creative you are.
Were you diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis?
Yeah.
Does that have any implications for typing? Or?
Well, my wrists, when I first got it, it was very aggressive and my wrists were badly affected and it was painful. But actually, I'm in such a good space now. I feel really good. Yeah. No, the drugs work.
People might have the condition, might be listening.
Yeah.
What did you use? What was your approach?
Oh, God. Look, it took a year. I was on more drugs than Ozzy Osbourne. At one point, the pharmacist took me aside and said, I'm very concerned about what you're on. Like, it was crazy. But I had to get it under control and eventually they figured it out. And once it's under control, then you just maintain it and then pray you don't get a flare up. So all I would say to, and I said this to many people, those people contact me now, I said, look, the first year is the hardest and it's hard. It's really hard. But once they get it under control, you get your life back.
Yeah. Wonderful.
That's great.
Thank you for bringing so much joy to so many people all your books. Book number 20, Sinead Moriarty. It's in all good bookstores now. It's called Good Sisters. Your children's book coming out in the autumn is?
Fixing Mum and Dad.
Fixing Mum and Dad. So keep an eye out for that. Perfect for back to school time. Sinead Moriarty, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lovely to chat to you this morning.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.